Since 1889, Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service has been a trusted name in the Richland Center area, providing compassionate care and support for families during difficult times. For assistance, call 608-647-4808. Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, trusted by the community for over 135 years.
And video games.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. A big storm that spread across the southeast over the weekend left at least 40 people dead as a result of tornadoes, high winds, and the threat of wildfires. ABC's Jim Ryan has more on what happened.
Once the smoke had cleared in Stillwater, Oklahoma, population 50,000, 74 homes had been destroyed.
Been the biggest challenge of my life.
Terry Estery's been a Stillwater firefighter for 27 years. Now, as chief, he has seen his neighbors suffer.
They've lost everything. I mean, they don't have clothes hangers, and they don't have clothes to put on those hangers, even if they did.
Dry conditions and high winds mean the fire threat is far from over. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
That storm moving toward the coast today. High wind warnings are up from Florida through New Jersey. Fire threat continues today, as Jim said, from Texas up through the Dakotas. President Trump will speak with Russian President Vladimir Putin tomorrow, Moscow has confirmed, as efforts continue to end the war in Ukraine. Land and power plants said to be a part of the negotiations. This is ABC News. Tragedy in Europe is 59 people were killed, more than 150 hurt, when a nightclub in North Macedonia caught fire due to a band's pyrotechnics. Here's ABC's Patrick Reval.
Several members of that popular band on stage called DNK also among the dead. Outside a hospital, victims' relatives gathering grief-stricken and angry. 22-year-old Maria Tasieva managed to escape, but not her sister. I was saved and she wasn't, she says. Police launching an investigation, saying the club was operating illegally and at least twice over its 250-person capacity.
North Macedonia declaring a week of mourning. Telegram CEO Pavel Durov has traveled from France to Dubai as French authorities continue investigating alleged criminal activity on his messaging app. After his arrest, he was barred from leaving France, but now he says he has left the country. NCAA basketball tournament brackets are in. Auburn is the number one seed for the men, UCLA the number one seed for the women. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
Are you looking for the perfect gift or a little sparkle for yourself? Pam's Fine Jewelry in Spring Green is a full-service jewelry store with a wide variety of styles to fit every occasion. From engagement rings to timeless keepsakes, our friendly and knowledgeable staff is here to help you find something special. Stop by today or give us a call at 588-2134. Pam's Fine Jewelry, where elegance and service shine. Pam's will be closed until March 18th and reopening March 19th. The old saying goes, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Sure applies to the Phoenix Center. The Bowling Alley has been the go-to for good times and great food for generations in Richland County. It's where good friends become better friends and good times become awesome memories. From a delicious pizza to bowling to a conversation over your favorite drink, the Phoenix Center in Richland Center is the right choice every time. The Phoenix Center. Call 649-7469.
Your WRCO Hometown Weather Watch is brought to you by the Schultz Mortgage Team. Call 608-738-8765 and find out how you can buy a house without needing 20% down.
A high of 55 degrees today, partly sunny, breezy, and turning much warmer. Southeast to south winds at 10 to 20 and gusty. A few clouds tonight, a low of 34 with south winds at 5 to 10. Tuesday, partly sunny, continued warm, a high of 62. Tuesday night, clouding over with a 30% chance of light rain late, a low of 39. And Wednesday, 48, breezy with rain likely. It could turn to snow later on in the afternoon. And 1 to 3 inches of snow possible through late evening Wednesday.
Today, small business owners know just how much hard work is involved in starting and growing a business. But the challenges involved are not foreign to you. You're all in. Still, it doesn't hurt to have some good neighborly help. Like yourself, State Farm agents are also small business owners. This enables them to help you choose the right insurance coverage to fit your small business needs. So why not insure your small business with a fellow small business owner who also happens to be a good neighbor? Call, text, or stop by Julie Karen State Farm in downtown Richland Center. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Looking for a job that rocks? The House on the Rock Resort in Royal Spring Green is hiring. They have openings for front desk associates, hotel housekeeping, janitorial maintenance, and more. With flexible part-time schedules and 5 shifts a week options, there's something for everyone. Apply today. Call 608-935-3639, extension 1201, or print an application at thehouseontherock.com. Join the team and work at a place that truly rocks.
Are you really getting the best collision repair service when insurance companies choose one for you? Your choice is simple. Choose Classic Auto Body in Spring Green. Don't let your insurance company fool you. You can choose the body shop for your repairs. With Classic Auto Body, you get twice the value. Nationally acclaimed quality at a reasonable body shop rate. Your choice is simple. Classic Auto Body, located on Highway 14, Spring Green. 588-7399. That's 588-7399. Classic Auto Body, home of the Ring Brothers.
If you're looking for that perfect gift or something special to brighten up your home, look no further than TriStar Gifts and More, located at 1651 U.S. Highway 14 East next to Dunkin' Donuts in Richland Center. They offer a friendly atmosphere filled with adorable, funny, and unique items. From beautiful candles to stunning metal art, TriStar Gifts has something for everyone. Visit them today or call 383-1280 for more information. TriStar Gifts and More, your one-stop shop for home decor and gifts for any occasion.
This Saturday, March 22nd, competitors will gather at Wisconsin Riverside Resort for the Leighton Brown Memorial Scholarship Cornhole Tournament. Registration begins at 10 a.m. The bags start flying at 11. Teams can enter for $20, and participants are encouraged to bring their own bags and a partner. For those without a teammate, organizers will assist in pairing up players. Pre-registration is recommended, and if interested, call or text Nicole at 412-5788 or Bill at 588-5156. Proceeds from this event go towards the Leighton Brown Memorial Scholarship, which supports River Valley High School graduates pursuing vocational or technical college. With a great cause behind the competition, players and spectators alike can expect a fun and meaningful day at Wisconsin Riverside Resort this Saturday, March 22nd.
Your fuel partner for upcoming planting season, make sure your equipment is ready to roll with quality fuel and lubes from Meyer Oil and LP of Reedsburg. With flexible delivery options and competitive pricing, we provide diesel, gasoline, and bulk lubes, serving most of Richland, Sauk, and surrounding counties. Wishing farmers a safe and successful planting season, call Meyer Oil and LP today at 608-524-3914.
Welcome to our morning show today from WRCO Radio. Joining us in the studio, Tony Kurtz is back this month, a Wisconsin State Assembly member representing the 41st Assembly District, and Howard Markline representing the 17th Senate District are here, both of here today. Either of you have any Irish background or not, Tony?
Well, good morning. I do not.
No?
My lovely wife has some.
Oh, okay.
Some Irish.
Howard?
Peggy is half Irish.
Oh, okay. That explains a lot.
Yeah. So she's half German, half Irish. So we have some interesting debates sometimes on how things are going in her life, and sometimes some of the issues she has. And if she's stubborn, I say, well, it's got to be the Irish. And I'm not sure she agrees with that.
You were at a St. Patrick's parade the other day, weren't you, Howard?
Yes, on Saturday at in Pertusine. Big parade, gosh. Considering it was cold. And in fact, it started out reasonably comfortable, I guess. And boy, the temperature dropped from the beginning of the parade and to the end of the parade. And but it was good. A lot of people, a lot of families, a lot of kids out. It was a great, great turnout. So happy I was there. But I was glad to jump back in the car, and after walking the parade.
Warm up. You were at the Lincoln Day dinner the other night, weren't you, Tony?
I was there on Saturday afternoon and then Saturday night, and then I went over to Reedsburg because they have a South Central Irish club over there, and I presented the Irishmen of the Year and the Irish Rose of the Year there in Reedsburg in the evening. So I had a busy day on Saturday.
Irishmen of the Year, that's quite a distinction there.
Right? It was, yes, Irishmen of the Year and Irish Rose of the Year. Of the Year.
So, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it was pretty
neat. I've attended that in the past. Yes, it's a fun evening. It really is. And there's some a number of Irish people in the area, and they're very proud of their heritage.
No doubt, as they should be.
Yeah.
Last time you were here, you were talking about, you had just toured the campus. I knew you were going to get a chance to talk to Mr. Rothman. Have you had a chance to meet
him? We did. We actually had a meeting with Mr. Rothman, UW assistant president, a few days later. We shared a lot of the photos that I took and some of the things we would like to see them do moving forward. They have talked to the county board, court council, and they're working through a couple things to see what they can do to try to alleviate the issue out there. And then this morning I did have breakfast with Dave Turk and a couple other county board members, and so we'll see what happens. They're in the process of talking to UW and see how, if they can revisit kind of what was done out there with all the items that were left behind.
Howard, have you heard anything as far as that?
I have not. I did speak last week with Jay Rothman, and the conversation more kind of big picture in terms of what the budget asks for the in-state budget. So we didn't talk about anything, I guess, specifically related to the campus here, but it's more big picture, what their funding, what he says their funding needs are in the budget.
Speaking of the budget, last time we were here, we were talking about what might be. Now we kind of know what it looks like. Can you give us a little bit of an update?
Well, in some respects, we do. I will say we are still waiting for two Supreme Court decisions. One, these are state Supreme Court decisions. One is on the 400-year veto of the school spending increase, the per-pupil spending increase. And so, you know, that case was heard already. The Supreme Court hasn't issued their opinion. It could come anytime, or it could be as late as June, probably. I think usually the Supreme Court issues their final opinions by like the end of June. So, and the relevance to the budget is that, you know, K-12 spending is the number one expenditure in our state budget. Okay. So depending on what the Supreme Court rules, you know, we don't know at this point what the biggest expenditure in this state budget could be. So I think that we're going to probably have to wait until that Supreme Court decision comes to we know what they say about the K-12 per pupil increase. So that's one case. The other case that is before the court is the literacy bill. And this has to do with the governor line item vetoed a bill that was not an appropriation bill. And the governor in our constitution, he says he can line item veto appropriations, but this bill didn't have any appropriations in it. That case has wound its way up to the state Supreme Court, and they will hear oral arguments at the Supreme Court on April 3rd on that case. So, and again, the relevance there is we have to kind of know what is an appropriation bill and what isn't, you know, as we develop the budget. So, apologize for the long answer, but I mean, at this point, there's still a whole lot of uncertainty. There was uncertainty a couple months ago, and I'm asked often about, you know, the budget process and, you know, when do you see it getting done? And I wish I knew. Once these two Supreme Court decisions are handed down, we'll have a much better idea of what the framework could be for the budget this year. So we do have, I think we'll be announcing probably tomorrow, we're going to be doing four public hearings around the state. And so we'll be announcing those, I believe, tomorrow, likely in Milwaukee area, Green Bay area, Northwest Wisconsin, and Central Wisconsin will be the four locations for the public hearings on the budget. So for that, that'll happen for sure to collect public input on the budget. So, but you know, we're still doing a lot of work. And I know, you know, with both the Senate and the Assembly, kind of looking at, and we're hearing from a lot of people. I mean, if you look at my calendar, it's just full of meetings with people advocating for spending for in their areas.
Yeah, one of the things, in fact, as co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, you get quoted quite a bit in the state media, but one of the things was the governor proposing helping out the prison system, things like that. It was another thing that I know you were kind of at least talking a little bit against that, Howard.
Well, you know, I tell you, actually, no, I'm supportive of, we need to do something with Waupun and Green Bay, okay? Those, I think Green Bay was built in the late 1800s. I mean, it's an archaic facility. And Waupun isn't much better. And they're inefficient to run, to operate. And I think because of the physical conditions of those two institutions, the morale there is not good. And, you know, we've got in Boston, I've got three prisons in my district, and closest to here being Boscobel. And Boscobel has some pretty serious offenders in that facility. But Boscobel's a newer facility, and they've made some additions to it and some enhancements. And anyway, and right now the vacancy rate in Boscobel is almost non-existent, okay, which is great, you know, because it wasn't too long ago that these officers were getting slammed, having to work additional shifts, and it was just it was terrible for their personal lives and stuff. So, but we talked about in the last budget, we talked about putting some money aside for a new facility to replace Green Bay and Waupun, and we kicked around. This is all done. Just conversations between the Assembly and Senate. We kicked around the idea of putting like $600 million aside towards a facility that would replace those two aging facilities. And make a long story short, there was concerns about that line item veto. The governor could line item veto that and redirect it to other areas. So that didn't happen. So I would be supportive of us facing the reality that we need to replace Green Bay and Waupun. I'm a little concerned with the proposal that some inmates at those facilities would be released, because what would be happening is, as they were doing this renovation project in Waupun, there would be quite a few people that would be just released into the public. I'm just concerned about public safety.
Tony, would you like to chime in on anything we've talked about so far?
Well, I want to go back to a little bit about the timeline of the budget. I mean, obviously, we're going to do listening sessions around the state, but we'll also do agency briefings. And so the timeline of the budget is going to look like what we've done in years past. But to Howard's point, there is a point in the budget process. Obviously, we want to get everything done by the 1st of July is the goal, because that's the end of the fiscal year, the budget year. But, you know, on the 400-year veto, that's the one we really needed a decision on sooner rather than later. So we'll go through the process. We'll go through everything. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to a court decision. But I do want to emphasize something about the partial veto. Historically speaking, it doesn't matter, Republican governor or a Democrat governor, they've always kind of followed the law and only did a line item veto in a Chapter 20 bill. A Chapter 20 is an appropriation bill, i.e. the state budget. By doing what Governor Evers did with, it was Act 20 is the bill that he went in and actually partial vetoed. That's a whole new ball game, because once again, Republican governors have never done that in the past, nor has other Democrat governors in the past. So this is going to be unique on the court case to see which way they side, because once again, that's going to affect how we legislate moving forward. Budget bill, that's an appropriation bill. The governor, Republican, Democrat, can definitely do the line item veto. This one was an exception to the rule, and so that's why we have to kind of know about that. But The one thing about the governor's budget that he introduced, we're going to, I think this week, Fiscal Bureau will do their final scoring. In other words, we'll get the full 1,900-page budget to see all the little ins and outs and really what it's cost. But just preliminary, it would increase state spending by about 20%. I think the vast majority of people don't think we need to increase our spending by 20%. You don't do your household spending by 20%. So that's something, obviously, we're going to look at. Also, the workforce, it's interesting. Part of his budget is also going to increase almost over 800, well, it's actually 1,300 GPR, general purpose positions. Once again, I think the vast majority of the public doesn't think we necessarily need to increase 1,300 more state workers. So those are the things that we're going to look at, and I'm not saying there's not certain places we need to increase staff, but I think across the board we're not going to increase like 1,300. So those are the things. I just want to get back to when we start the budget process, we're going to build from our previous budget, you know, and that's what we've been doing for the last three budgets. And you know, is a document that we agreed on, Republicans and Democrats, and that's going to be our base budget moving forward as we start the new budget process.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the court cases. Mm-hmm. Any idea of the timeline or anything like that, Howard?
I wish I knew. I mean, we, you know, as Tony said, I mean, we, the 400-year veto, that is one that, you know, probably has more immediate impact to us. And and even in how we draft, how they draft the bill, because, you know, and the way the governor, this is almost 2 years ago now, he line item vetoed some digits, okay, so that, and that's how we got to this 400 years. He was very creative. So, like, if we were going to put in the budget the year 2027, can you write in 2027, or do you now have to write out the words 2027? Okay. I mean, seriously, it's, you know, we don't know what that looks like. So, but we definitely need guidance. So, you know, we're going to keep, Joint Finance Committee will keep doing what we can. Generally, we do not do anything real substantive until about May 15th, and I'd say about as far as any big agencies, budgets, and that sort of thing. And the reason that we wait till about then is that, you know, around May 15th, middle of May, the legislature receives the updated revenue numbers, the estimates from the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau. So they recalculate the numbers, and we don't want to start anything big as far as any budget decisions, and then find out, oh gosh, we don't have enough money, or we got more money. You know what I mean? So we wait till about May 15th. Now, we may do some smaller agencies and a few, you know, smaller, you know, we got agencies that ask for $7,000. Well, $7,000 probably, whatever happens on May 15th, isn't going to matter for that kind of an expenditure. So, and I, again, on the governor's budget, I guess I just, you know, emphasize the, his budget was, you know, 1,900 and some pages long, just full of policy and all kinds of policy, you know. And to me, the budget should be a budget, not a policy document. And he's pretty much made it a policy document. So, you know, if you want to legalize marijuana, that should be a separate bill, not tucked into the budget someplace. That ought to be debated, separate legislation, go through the committee process and debate it in the light of day, not tucked into a 1,900-page document. So I think the last budget that we did was 183 pages long. So, I mean, it went from about the same number, 1,900 or so pages, down to 183. And my guess is we'll probably be kind of along a similar trajectory this time.
Mm-hmm. I think of, when you're talking about that, I think about some of these attack ads, you know, during the political season, things that are tucked in there. Lots of times they'll accuse somebody, they voted for this. Well, they did because it was thrown in line, right?
Well, it's the devil's in the details.
Right.
And that's where I think as a state, we actually do a fairly good job. You know, when it goes through the committee process and the budget process, we can break those areas out. And if we have to run a standalone bill on something that's controversial, we can do that. So I think we actually do. I think more at the federal level, they get some of those what they call poison pills, where somebody might have something in there they just absolutely positively can't support. I do want to go back to the prisons. I actually met, and I know Howard's already have met with the new interim Department of Corrections secretary, and we've had good conversations about, you know, what does the footprint look like. And I am in, if any of your listeners have ever seen the movie Shawshank Redemption, it was a very popular movie a couple years, well, probably several decades ago. But the two prisons that we're talking about, Green Bay and Waupun, were built in the late 1800s. And the best analogy I can give to folks is, they literally have the same design as the prison in Shawshank Redemption. And so if that kind of tells you what our prison, our correctional officers have to deal with, there is a need to replace those two prisons. And it's interesting, the bed capacity at one is 800, the other one has about a 900, so it's about 1,700 beds. I know the governor is on a mantra, he doesn't want to add new beds, but you know, if you got rid of Green Bay and Waupun, we just build a new prison with the same bed capacity. I think at least on the assembly side of the House, on the Republican side, we would be more than happy to do something like that, because I think in the long run, it's going to be safer for our correctional staff. And to be fair, it's also safer for our inmates, because we have lost some inmates at Waupun over the years. We just had, so I think I've talked about this a lot with our constituents in the area. They understand the need. They understand how things can age. And I think there is a will statewide to actually do something for a change and get this fixed.
All right. No, among your priorities for the session, you talked about providing quality education. So maybe you could talk about that. What are some of your visions for quality education?
Well, you know, I'm obviously very concerned, you know, with the, you know, what's coming out of our schools and stuff. And we're going to be on the floor tomorrow. The Senate will be on the floor tomorrow. And one of the bills we're going to be taking up is the school accountability, the cut scores. And what happened there last summer was the Department of Public Instruction unilaterally changed the cut scores for how our schools are graded, okay, and the test scores of our students. So, and I heard a lot from some of our local district administrators about that. They were not consulted on this. It was a decision made by the DPI superintendent, and very concerned about it, because a lot of these, you know, the administrators I talk to, they want their kids in their schools to be performing at a very, very high level. And so there's a perception out there, and I think it's probably a valid one, that these cut scores, they had the effect of making some of our schools probably look better than what they would have looked using historical standards. So the other thing is, we lose comparability. You know, anytime you change the grading metrics for the schools, you lose that comparability. So and you know, for a lot of parents, I think they want to kind of look at the trends. You know, what's my local school district doing in terms of reading and math scores over the last number of years? So that would be something I know that we're, you know, I think we'll be taking that up tomorrow on the floor, and hopefully you know, and then, you know, as relates to K-12 funding, obviously, we mentioned that's going to be a Supreme Court decision. We need to wait, see what happens there, and we'll go from there. The state, the number one expenditure is in our budget is K-12 expenditures. It has been, and it will be in the future.
Tony?
Well, the right before, all our students were graded on a national, and if we're reading or writing, it was a federal standard, and that way you could compare states once again. But when they lowered the standards, and they literally lowered the standards, and so you couldn't compare. It wasn't a standard they had in other states. It wasn't a federal standard, and so you couldn't compare what how we were doing in reading and math compared to other states. And so, and once again, I want to make sure I emphasize this to your listeners. This is not something the assembly passed this last a few weeks ago, where basically all we're saying is let's go back to the federal standard that we were at before. And interesting enough, when Governor Evers was the state superintendent, that was a standard that he put in place as the DPI secretary, and even he has called, you know, these lowering the standards or going to this new, it was even disappointing for him. And like I said, I'm not putting words, that's what he said. He said it was disappointing. So I think just getting back to the federal standard is what we need to do. You know, you and I were talking before we came on air, you know, obviously during COVID there was learning loss, and in our school districts, to their credit, they have done a tremendous job to try to catch up with that. But now they can't compare where they're at. You know, they can't see how the progression they're doing by lowering the standards that we did. So once again, what we did in the assembly, and I know the Senate's going to take that up tomorrow, and I sure hope the governor will sign it. All we're saying is let's go back to the standards we had in the past, which were the federal standards. They were very easy to comply with. And once again, we could have a good benchmark for our reading and writing scores.
Mm-hmm. We hear lots and lots about the surplus in the state as well. We've talked about that before, Howard.
Yeah, and again, the surplus is still around a little north of $4 billion. And, you know, the caution that I always try to express is that a lot of that surplus is one-time money that was resulted from the incredible inflationary impact that we had post-COVID, okay? And it, you know, a lot of federal money came in, almost $67 billion came in collectively to the state of Wisconsin, to individuals, PPP loans to businesses. The governor got $2.5 billion, a lot of money went to our schools, et cetera. So that worked its way through the system and it generated inflation, certainly. And, you know, what happened was when the cost of a truck went up 10%, the state of Wisconsin makes more money because we get sales taxes based on the price, you know. So the cost of a hamburger went up. We got more money and stuff. So anyway, but it's one-time money. And so, you know, we need to be cautious. And as we, you know, start putting the budget together, And what I hope we do, and we did this last budget, is matching one-time surplus with one-time investments, okay? And last time around, we took a chunk of money, we put it into roads, you know? We paid for buildings, buildings on campuses and that sort of thing. Instead of borrowing money, which was the norm in the past, we paid cash for it because we had cash. We paid down $400 million of debt, you know. So again, we used that one-time surplus for one-time investments. And I suspect that we will be looking at doing a similar thing, you know, this time around. So another thing that I always want to emphasize is three numbers. And these are when I say revenue, I'm talking taxes. That's income taxes. That's the number one source of income taxes, sales tax and corporate taxes, as well as some other miscellaneous taxes. But the current year that we're in right now, which ends on June 30th, our revenue, our taxes are projected to go up by 4.3%, which is pretty healthy increase in tax collections. Now, that is largely due to, if you look at sales tax, it's pretty much the rate of inflation, a couple percent. So it's not a lot there. A lot of it has to do with the stock market being up, capital gains tax, you know, collections are projected to be up, drive that quite a bit. If you look at the next 2 years, though, the first year of the next biennium would end on June 30th, 2026. That's projected to be 3.4%. And then the following year, 1.4%. So, you know, you look at the 3 years in a row, 4.3, 3.4, 1.4. So the projections for the taxes coming into the state, into the future, at least in the next couple of years, is not going up. It's coming down. And so as we do the budget, again, I just want to make sure that we all have exercised some caution, that we're not overcommitting ongoing expenses into the future when the tax revenue may not be there two years from now.
Anything you wanted to add, Tony, about the surplus?
Well, I kind of want to emphasize, so you just heard the percentage increases that we're going to see in the next 3 years as far as growth, revenue growth. I want to emphasize the growth that we had during the COVID years, and to Howard's point, the $67 billion that came from the federal government to the state of Wisconsin. So you heard Howard talk about the numbers, you know, 4.2, 3.7, and then the 1.4. In 2021, that number was 9.6. In 2022, it was 9.2. In 2023, it's 6.8. So my emphasis on that is you could see just how that money came down from the feds and how we as Wisconsinites, we spent that money, and we see that in our growth rates during that time, that, you know, the tax collections. I mean, they were huge. And now we're going to be back to a very normal pace of, you know, the 4.2s, the 3.5, you know. And that's why as we build a budget moving forward, we got to just be very cautious about the growth. And it's going to be more of a realistic growth number that we're going to see throughout.
Not relevant maybe so much for our state, but any idea of other states and how they're dealing with things and, you know, their surpluses?
Well, it's interesting. So Howard and I, being state legislators, we belong to the National Council of State Legislators, and it's basically a nationwide, and they look at comparisons of other states. A lot of our states, for their 2026 budget cycle, the end of theirs, they are looking at pretty significant structural deficits. I think some of the states are almost $5 billion, $6 billion structural deficits. And so they're going to have a rude awakening, whereas, you know, Wisconsin is in actually a very strong position. You know, we haven't created these large structural deficits by basically taking one-time money and putting that into our base budget. We've been very responsible. And so, I mean, we've got to be cautious about that. But some of these other states around us, like in Illinois, like a Minnesota, which is, I mean, Minnesota had a last budget cycle, they had a $17 billion surplus. At the end of this budget cycle, they're looking at a $6 billion deficit. So that's why we've got to be very cautious about what we do. We have been very prudent. Some states have not.
Yeah, we've and I attend some national meetings on this stuff, on the budgets and stuff. And we are in, compared to the rest of the country, we're in good shape. We really are. And I think there are states, and in Minnesota, you know, Tony mentioned Minnesota. I mean, you know, money was coming in great, and they spent it. They added programs and that sort of thing. And in the short term, it probably looks good. But, you know, and I in putting the budget together, you know, I want to make sure that we not only can afford it in the short term, in the next biennium, but sitting here 2 years from now, that, you know, we're not setting ourselves up for failure in the next budget. You know, we always got to look at this budget, not in. And sometimes I think there's a tendency to do that. Just look in, you know, a budget, you got enough money to fund it for, you know, this 2 year period. But I also want to take a look at the next couple of years. So one thing we should probably talk about, we've been talking about taxes coming in and all that going up. But the spending side of things is not good. And we call it the cost to continue. These are expenditures for Medicaid, for example. Going up dramatically. So you're talking cost to continue into the future, you know, $2.26 billion, which is, it's high. It's very high, you know, and the bulk of that is medical assistance, the MA program. So, you know, revenue going up, boy, our expenses too are going up into the future. And a lot of those costs to continue, we have no control over. It's like your utility bill. What are you going to, you got to pay it, you know. So anyway, we got to be careful. And again, I always look at not just, you know, the next 2 year budget, but how does the following 2 year budget, what does that look like?
We'll come back with more from Howard Markline and Tony Kurtz after these words on The Morning Show.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Paul from Prescription Center. For over 40 years, we have been a trusted member of the health care of our community. They've always been here for everyone. From West Seminary Street, where it all started, to the hospital, and now to Sextonville Road, we have provided honest advice, low prices, and with the help of many of our friends, a pay-it-forward account to help those that can't afford their medication. We are humbled by the trust we have earned. We have always made every effort to make pharmacy affordable to all. We accept all insurances because you deserve to have your plan honored. The only area pharmacy to take TRICARE and CHAMP VA. What better way to say thank you to those who served? We thank all for their trust. If you want this type of service, let us be your pharmacy of choice.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
It's good to look into the windows you'll be looking out. The perfect place to look into new windows is PMI Windows of Lone Rock. PMI offers premium vinyl windows custom made to order with the latest advancements in glass and hardware technologies, fusion welded frames and sashes, and the industry's best lifetime no-nonsense transferable warranty. Windows are not all created equal. Let PMI custom tailor premium vinyl windows just for you. Call 583-7200 for a free estimate.
So, you want to buy a house. You could go online, do your research, find the dream listing, go see it, and get catfished. Back to the drawing board. More scheduling, more viewings, more, this doesn't even look like the photos. You could finally find one that does match the photos. Then comes the offer. Stress rash? Yep, make that three. And here's the paperwork. Yep, never-ending paperwork. It's a lot. But you don't have to do it alone. Because there's an agent who's a realtor here to guide and help protect you as you find the home that's right for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. Right by you.
Bailey Paint & Decorating reminds you that the perfect color should be enjoyed for years to come. Extraordinarily durable Benjamin Moore paint and exterior stain ensure exactly that. Bailey Paint and Benjamin Moore know that getting the right product is the secret of success. Bailey Paint & Decorating ensures you have the right color and products and offers the best paint you can buy in Benjamin Moore paint products. Bailey Paint & Decorating, Court Street, Downtown Richland Center, your Benjamin Moore headquarters.
Got stumps? Call Titus Osborne today for a free estimate. With over 15 years of professional stump grinding and removal experience, Titus is insured and ready to handle your project. Don't let those stumps linger. Get the removal scheduled before spring. Customer satisfaction is a must, and Titus is committed to providing fast, reliable, no-hassle service. Call 608-604-7757 now for all your stump removal needs. 604-7757. Titus Osborne, your go-to expert for stump removal.
When challenging conditions arise, we don't back down. We up our game. Outpacing the competition with innovations fueled by Bayer's R&D. Keeping you equipped with an expanded portfolio, elite genetics, and additional local test plots. Channel leads the field so you can rise above. See how you can save at channel.com/finance24. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brent Barnett, Brownfield anchor reporter based in Iowa. Tune in each day to Managing for Profit to hear expert advice from the industry's top producers and leaders to make your operation more profitable. Topics range from insurance, government programs, taxes and regulations, environmental factors, policy updates, overall risk management, and more. Unlock the potential of your farming operation with Managing for Profit each day on Brownfield.
Welcome back to our morning show studio here. We have State Senator Howard Markline, and we have Tony Kurtz here, Tony representing Wisconsin's 41st Assembly District. So welcome back to our morning show visit here today. Tony, how's the farm climate right now? How's it looking?
You know, it's kind of up in the air. I was talking, matter of fact, I was in the Linden Station Fire Department. They had a wonderful corned beef and cabbage fundraiser for their fire department, and I was sitting next to, his name's Ernie Giebel. He's a cattle rancher farmer up by Linden Station, and we were going by cattle prices, and he's pretty happy with cattle prices. But then on the other flip side, you can talk somebody that's either dairy or, you know, grain, they're not doing too good right now. So it's up in the air. But I think every spring, Howard talked about it. You know, you smell the fresh manure, and spring is in the air, and you know, before you know it, people are going to be planting and getting giddy about it. And I know I'm kind of getting that way as well. So.
You're right, in the public. What's the feeling about all the tariffs and all that talk that is
you know, it's
Canada?
Interesting. I have not, I obviously you see that on a nightly news, but and I'm sure people here and there, but I have not had people come up to me and say, "Hey, well, how's this going to do it?" I think people kind of now are waiting and seeing, and I think I'm kind of in that mode too. Let's just wait and see what, in fact, I think a lot of this is kind of posturing, but we'll see. So,
Howard?
Yeah, I was at in Lafayette County last week at a farmer-led watershed group meeting, their annual meeting. And there's probably 50 farmers there or so. So I had a chance to talk to a lot of the farmers. And I asked them, one-on-one, so how are things in the farm? I'll tell you what, I did not hear one negative comment from the farmers, and overall, he said, dairy, we're doing fine, kind of thing. So, and I asked him about the tariffs and stuff, and he said, you know what, we've been through this stuff before, and these are farmers that have probably been around for a while, they're not 24 years old, and of course, this time of year, I think farmers are eternal optimists. It's going to be a good year. We're going to have good growing weather and all that. So, I was kind of surprised too that there wasn't nearly as much concern. Again, we were talking about farmers, one on one. But again, and it's, that's a group of pretty good farmers. They were, they're good, pretty good operators, and they've been through a lot. And I was talking to a farmer just a little bit younger than me a month or so ago, and about the weather. He worried about it being dry and stuff, and he said, we've been through this before, it'll rain eventually, and we'll I think when you've been around long enough, you understand these are cycles, and to Tony's his comment, on just wait and see. I think that's probably good advice at this point, because, I hear from constituents saying, what about what's going on in Washington? And the thing is, we don't know. I don't have any inside information, and we don't. So let's we have to wait and see what happens, and it probably is posturing, and I think, and we'll have to just wait and see. So, but getting back to the farmers, I guess I have not heard any cries recently. There, I think in the recent past, I heard more concerns than I'm hearing right now.
Mm-hmm. Also, concerns about cuts to Medicaid programs and things like that. Have you heard anything?
No, and that's something I've sat down with all my ADRC directors in our area, and they've made me very aware of what those could, the ramifications of those. And so I appreciate their feedback and the value of those. But once again, I kind of go back, let's kind of see where we're going to be at and what in fact does, if anything. I think, once again, you just kind of got to wait and see. I know the value, obviously Richland County, Medicaid is, probably touches about 26%. Of Richland County, so it's a huge part. Juneau County is actually 28%, so it does something that does affect our area. But once again, let's just kind of wait and see. I know human nature is to, and obviously once you turn the news on, everything is negative, negative, negative. Let's just wait and see and control what we can control in our own area.
So on the ADRCs, they do great work. These are services provided predominantly to our senior citizens, okay? And all over my district, they just do incredible work, and I'm so grateful for them. And one of the things I wanted to bring up was in the last budget, because of the great work that they do, we increased their funding by 10%, okay? And so here, I think it's Eagle Country of Wisconsin is that covers Richland County, Juneau County,
Crawford
County. Okay, so in the last month or so, we're talking to some of our ADRCs about how much more they could do with this additional funding, 10% increase in the budget last year. Do you know how much they got here for Eagle country? Zero. They had no increase whatsoever. And what happened was the Department of Health Services changed the metrics on how they allocate this money. And so they added in a couple things on, in addition to age. It was predominantly, it used to be distributed around the state predominantly based on the age of your population. The older your counties, the more money you got, which makes sense since that's a service for. They also added in ethnicity and race into the formula. So where did all the money go? Milwaukee. And which is just very frustrating, you know, when I, because again, our local ADRCs, they do great work, and it's just very frustrating to understand or find out that, you know, they didn't get any increase whatsoever. So we've talked to Department of Health Services, and, you know, again, it was kind of like with the cut scores with education. I mean, you know, the rules were changed in the middle of the stream and without telling anybody. I wasn't aware of this till a month or so ago.
Tony, anything you wanted to add?
No, and once again, this is interesting when we have these conversations in Madison about how I was literally having this conversation the other day about the east side of the state and the west side of the state and how, you know, obviously everybody thinks there's such a disagreement between Republicans and Democrats, and there is. I'm not going to say there isn't, but there's also a big difference between some of my Republican colleagues that represent, you know, the eastern side of the state versus, you know, us, you know, on the western side of the state. It's like we're you know, when it comes back to road funding or broadband or you know, ADRCs, it's like they don't realize that rural communities need just as much as they have in you know, the cities, you know, outside of Waukesha and Milwaukee. You know, we have the same needs, and it's just a matter of making sure we have a seat at the table and say, hey, we need this just as much as you need it on the eastern side of the state. And the interesting thing about, as you look at the, especially the Joint Finance Committee, I said this last, I think last cycle too, the makeup of the Joint Finance Committee over the last several budgets has been a lot more rural legislators. And that actually, as some people may not understand this, but our budgets actually have been, over the last several budgets, a little bit more rural-centric to realize we need funding out here just like you need it over on the eastern side of the state. And so we're going to continue to do that, especially when you talk about our ADRCs, our roads, schools. But, you know, we got work to do. But it's interesting, the dynamics down in Madison about just our little struggles we have with our members on the east side and the west side.
Mm-hmm. Accessibility and affordability of health care, too. You know, that's, I mean, we kind of touched on that a little bit, but I know that's one of your goals, Howard.
Yeah. And, you know, we have, I've got a lot of hospitals. I've got a lot of nursing homes in my district, and I'll be visiting with a nursing home shortly here after I leave. And so, you know, they're, you know, they got challenges. I mean, their costs, too, have increased dramatically, and you know, our rural hospitals are so important to our rural communities. They are. You know, you got to have good health care here. So anyway, so as we get into the budget, you know, I'm going to be advocating for you know, like I said, our nursing homes and as well as our hospitals. And there's a tie there too, because we've got situations, we still have situations where the hospitals have patients that are ready to be discharged, but they don't have a place to send them. Okay, there aren't any slots available for at the nursing home. So we need to make sure that continuum is working, because otherwise, you know, patients are sitting in a expensive hospital setting. Incredible costs, and a lot of these are Medicaid or Medicare patients, and costing taxpayers a lot of money. We need to get them into other facilities that are more reasonable in cost and better for them. I think people want to get out of the probably hospital as soon as they can.
Mm-hmm. We hear about hospitals closing. We have here in the past couple of years in the state.
Well, and that's where I think, to Howard's point about making sure when we talk about rural healthcare and just rural in general, you know, obviously the hospital here is a critical access. That is incredibly important when you look at our region. You know, critical access are basically hospitals below the size of 25 beds. If you think about why you want to have a critical access hospital is basically those life, you know, you got a hospital right here in this community, and where's the next one? I mean, obviously the next one's going to be Madison. So that's why critical access is so key. But also part of that is staffing. You know, when Howard talks about they don't have enough bed capacity in the nursing homes, it's they have the bed capacity. It's just they don't have the staffing because they have very, very rigorous regulations they have to follow. And they have to have the staff to have people in those beds. Well, if you don't have the staff, obviously you can't occupy those beds. And that's kind of where we're getting at with some of the hospitals is we are getting very short on staff. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's a CNA, it doesn't matter if it's a nurse anesthetist, it doesn't matter if it's a general surgeon or a family practitioner. We are short, and that's where I think as we look over the next couple budgets, and we've done this for especially healthcare professionals. We've actually incentivized them in many ways to practice in a rural setting by giving scholarships, helping pay for their college, things like that. But it's also getting students involved. The other day, I toured Waniwak Union Center School, and they're offering CNA courses. They had 8 CNAs last year complete their class down at the high school level. They opened up to Hillsboro. They opened it up to another high school to join them to do the CNA classes. But the point is they're getting more kids involved at the high school level, where a lot of these kids are ready to go as soon as they graduate, and then they can pursue a career later if they want to get into nursing or et cetera. But I give our schools a lot of credit because they're recognizing the need for those healthcare jobs. And they're first of all, they're great jobs. They're very rewarding, but they are so sorely needed.
Howard, I know we wanted to recognize an area man I think it's posthumously, but somebody from our district that has done pretty well over the years.
Yeah, so David Martin lived recently in the Muscadet area, and David Martin was a legislator from the Fox Valley area. Nina, I believe, is where he served for several terms in the state legislature. And so after his tenure representing that area, he relocated to Southwest Wisconsin, was very active in the community down here. And anyway, he passed away recently. And so tomorrow on the floor, we're going to be recognizing him with a resolution, which is done for, you know, any a legislator who passes away. But he was again very active. I saw him at lots and lots of events in the area, and just a good guy, and he served the state well, and he served his community well.
So you'll be on the Senate floor tomorrow then?
We will, yes. So we'll be taking up that. I don't have the whole list of bills that we're going to be taking up. Probably the most substantive one that we'll be taking up is the bill that we talked about already, and that has to do with the school accountability. Going back, it's the same bill that the Assembly passed, and going back to the standards that existed for the last year, I don't know how many years, you know, a couple of decades, I think. So going back to those baseline.
What's up next for you, Tony?
Well, tomorrow, we're going to be on the Assembly floor tomorrow, again on Thursday. Wednesday, there's a lot of committee hearings. So, once again, we are in full session and hitting the ground running and doing a lot of interesting things at the Capitol.
When you come back next month, you'll probably have, you will have had the plow in the ground, maybe.
I'm hoping. I actually was working on it the other day.
Is that right? Getting ready.
I was working on it.
And we'll see you in a couple of months, Howard.
Yes, you will. Thank you.
So thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Phil.
You bet. State Senator Howard Markline and Tony Kurtz representing the 41st Assembly District here in our Richland Center WRCO listening area. We'll have more coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show. We'll talk to some FFA students right here in the studios.
Opioid manufacturer Purdue Pharma's Political Action Committee donated to just one Wisconsin candidate in 2016. That candidate was extreme politician Judge Brad Schimmel. The company also gave money to a national Republican group whose PAC spent nearly $3 million on Schimmel's 2018 election. From the year 2000 to 2017, Wisconsin had over 7,500 opioid-related deaths. Democratic and Republican attorneys general from other states and 71 out of 72 counties filed lawsuits against Purdue Pharma. But Brad Schimmel refused to join them. Thousands of Wisconsinites died.
Wisconsin people should always take priority over profits. Tell Judge Brad Schimmel to look out for Wisconsinites, not out-of-state drug companies. Call 262-548-7548. That's 262-548-7548. Paid for by Better Wisconsin Together Incorporated.
C.S. Lewis said, "You can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the ending." This is Darren Klingeman of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service at Richland Center in Muscadet. We encourage you to savor the moments you have with your family and friends, leaving you with few regrets in the end. And when the time comes to celebrate a life well lived, we'll be ready to support and serve you at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Attention cattle producers! Red Fest is coming up this Sunday, 1 p.m. at Bloomington Livestock Exchange. Come early to check out 48 registered Red Angus bulls and over 150 commercial Red Angus females. Now is the time to register to bid online at Cattle USA or DV Auction. For complete details on all the top genetics, visit redfestsale.com. Now get ready to upgrade your herd on the 23rd. We'll see you this Sunday at Red Fest.
See the new Buick Envista at your local Buick dealer, Sleepy Hollow. The new Buick Envista crossover, a great car with great fuel economy at a great price. Starting only $23,990 and in stock now at Sleepy Hollow in Viroqua. Buick Enclave, Buick Envision, Buick Encore GX, and the all-new Buick Envista. At Sleepy Hollow Chevrolet Buick GMC, now your new local Buick dealer on Viroqua's north side.
Sleepy Hollow.
Hauling, fencing, hunting, as sure as real work requires breaking a sweat, John Deere Gator utility vehicles work as tough and play as hard as you do. Find your Gator at Hillsboro Equipment, because you don't need just any side-by-side. You need a cargo box that performs under stress and extreme conditions, and an engine that hustles with or without.